It's time for JT the Brick.
The Raider offseason is about content that is productive.
Shotgun to O'Connell. Backpedaling, lobbing to the end zone, trying to get at him. Makes the grab! Touchdown, Raiders!
I thought Aiden O'Connell played pretty well last year. He's a quarterback who's serviceable.
Now pressure. Gets out of there. Cosby's got it from behind! Back at the 45-yard line!
There's no better player who plays with heart and passion and speed than Mad Max Crosby. Wait till you see him this upcoming season.
JT the Brick.
Dot to throw. Spillane on the blitz, and he wraps him up and holds him up for a sack.
I love the addition of Jack Jones. All the plays he made last year will be a great addition for this team moving forward.
Intercepted down the sideline. Intercepted Jack Jones, and he walks in. Touchdown.
And now,
Raiders!
All right, now we're good. Let's get to it.
Here's JT the Brick.
Well, this isn't JT the Brick. This is Vinny Bonsignor. I am honored to sit in for the great JT the Brick show. We're here till 2 o'clock and want to talk about our good friends over at Resorts World. Resorts World is proud to present a culinary collaboration, Pan-Asian pop-up dinner featuring the Food Network's favorite celebrity chef couple, Chefs Jet and Ali Tila. It's happening July 1st with Chef Tal Ronan at Crossroads Kitchen at Resorts World. Reservations can be made at Open Table. The JT the Brick Show is a proud partner of Resorts World Las Vegas Culinary Collaboration. That sounds delicious, Bobby. I am, it's getting ready. It's lunchtime-ish, so getting a little hungry. So when I see a little bit of a culinary collaboration, Pan-Asian pop-up dinner, I mean, is your stomach starting to grumble when you hear that?
No.
What?
No, not one bit. I'm sorry, I'm a very basic person when it comes to my food. I'm not into Pan-Asian fusion, this, that. Just give me a teriyaki bowl. I'm a happy guy.
All right, well, maybe we can make that happen. There's got to be some way to
shrimp, rice, teriyaki sauce,
exactly.
No veg.
Good exactly. To go. There you go. Thank you, Bobby. I appreciate that. That is happening at Resorts World on July 1st. So go to Open Table and make your reservations. Talking a lot about our observations from OTAs and minicamp, and I got to say this is really interesting because I don't remember the exact day that we were out there, but I was watching the wide receivers go through their individual workouts, and there was a couple of drills that they were doing. And the way it lines up, usually when Devontae's out there, he's going to get the first rep, then it usually goes Jacoby Myers, and then Trey Tucker, and then so on and so forth. So picture the kind of the depth chart. In that case, it's not a depth chart. It's your first three wide receivers. And then after that, you know, the reserve players. But the your first three wide receivers, based on the starters, get the first three reps, right? So watching Devontae do his thing, it was just a 10-yard sprint forward where there was a coach, you know, portraying a defensive back. And the wide receiver either cut right or cut left. Very basic stuff, just kind of getting your muscle memory going and all that. And, you know, Devontae Adams, spectacular athlete, boom, does it. Looked smooth. Jacoby Myers, another spectacular athlete, boom, does it. Then it's Trey Tucker. And this happened over and over and over during OTAs. It wasn't just smooth. It wasn't just fast. It was an explosion. The quickness that he covered those 10 yards compared to the others. And let's not kid ourselves, Jacoby Myers and Devontae Adams are plenty fast. But there's that fast, and then there's Trey Tucker fast. And he just looked like he was shot out of a cannon. And I just was, holy cow. And I saw this so many times during OTAs and minicamp, where whether it was just watching him run his route in 11-on-11 or 7-on-7s, or watching him go to work during the individual periods where they were just running basic drills, but he was full on, all out, getting to top end speed. And it really struck me how much more explosive and polished he looked in terms of his route running, which was something that I know that he put a lot of time into this offseason. But that explosion, I have to laugh a little bit, because throughout the season, you know, you're in the locker room, you go check in on, you know, players and how you doing, what's going on, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And there were probably about three or four times throughout last season at various points where, you know, you go talk to Trey Tucker off to the side and, you know, how you doing, how's your rookie season going, you know, that type of talk. And one thing he reminded me of a couple of times, maybe even three times, and he didn't make a big deal out of this. He wasn't using it as an excuse whatsoever. It was just literally the reality of the situation. What he was saying was he hasn't been able to get, you know, I haven't gotten to my top end speed yet. And I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, I got another, you know, gear to get to, but because of some leg situations that he was dealing with, they weren't major injuries, but they were just enough at this level, you know, just enough to hamper him from really letting it fly, really getting to his highest gear and his fastest gear. So he kind of had to settle for in between gears 3 and gear 4, and that was the fastest he could get to last year. And I would kid him. I was like, man, that's kind of scary for the rest of the league if this is not your fastest, because you look really damn fast. He's like, yeah, you know, I'm kind of counting on that, because if that's what the scouting report looks like and that's what they're seeing on film, eventually he's going to have that fourth gear. He's going to have access to that fourth gear. And all of a sudden it's going to be a different player than the one they thought they were playing against based on the film work that they did. And that day is coming. That day is here, because it's obvious that whatever leg issues he was dealing with last year are a thing of the past, because his explosiveness this offseason was so apparent. And it was kind of cool because, you know, as a reporter, you watch and you observe and you're making your you know, evaluations, you're doing your own reading of the situation. And I'm not sitting here saying I'm Vince Lombardi or Sean McVay or anybody that does it at a highest level. But I feel like I've been around long enough and observed long enough to be able to pick up on things. And throughout, you know, OTAs and minicamp, I kept reminding myself, just for whatever reason, just being drawn to number to Trey Tucker number 11 and just going, man, he looks good. He's looking pretty good. You know, I just kept saying that. I know Q and I talked about it a few times as we were watching it. And then to hear Antonio Pierce, without specifically being asked the question of Trey Tucker, when we talked to Antonio on Thursday, he brought up Trey Tucker as somebody that has taken some steps forward. And I was like, oh man, everyone's going to, because I had put him on my list of somebody to write about in my final observations of OTAs. You can check out that story over at Vegas Nation. And I was like, oh man, everyone's going to think I'm writing about Trey Tucker because Antonio Pierce just brought up Trey Tucker. But as God is my witness, I had already had him on my list because he was jumping out to me as somebody that looked different than he did last year. And I felt he looked good last year. It wasn't a finished product. It was obvious that he needed to, you know, work on a few things. That's natural for this stage of somebody's career. He was a rookie, learning a new position, learning a new offense, learning how to see the game from an NFL player's vantage point, attack NFL defenses, figure out NFL coverages. All of those things are not the easiest thing to do in the world when you're just trying to get your feet under you as a rookie. So there was always going to be time for him to really say, okay, now this is really what I want to work in on this offseason, one of which was getting his legs back, his full legs back, which is obvious that he had, but also learning some of the finer points of playing wide receiver in the NFL and understanding coverages and understanding how to attack certain coverages. They're trying to take something away from you. You figure that out, what they're taking away from you, and either go get it by any means necessary, or if that's what they're thinking, great. I'll let you think that, because I'm going to do something completely different based on the coverage that you're showing me right in front of me. So all of those things were bound to improve, and they sure seemed like they've improved. And so for us, me and Q and others that were kind of touting Trey during the phases that we got a chance to see, the open practices that we got a chance to see, it kind of validates that, like, okay, we were onto something there. You know, if Antonio Pierce feels like and took the time to point that out without being specifically asked about Trey Tucker, then it shows us, gives some validation to what we thought we were seeing. And certainly what we saw was really interesting. And the reason I bring all that up is because every offense, every great offense, there's always somebody that becomes kind of an X factor. You know, when you start looking at the pecking order of the Raiders offense, let's just stay with the pass game for early. All right, obviously, defenses are going to pay attention to Davante Adams. You'd be ludicrous, idiotic not to. He's still, right now, a top three wide receiver in this game. So Davante Adams is going to get a lot of attention. Then you talk about Jacoby Myers, who, by the way, Antonio Pierce was also tooting his horn in a major way. Another player that just continues to get better and just continues to flash and is, in the truest sense of the word, a professional football player. Like, he takes everything so seriously. There's a smoothness to him. I liken him in his in terms of his the subtle ways that he goes about it. To somebody like, if you ever remember Michael Jackson dancing on the stage, he made things look really easy, but there's an artwork to that. It's not that easy. The artwork is making something that's really hard look so easy and smooth. And so that's why, my nickname for Jacoby Myers is a, kind of a smooth operator, kind of a player. He just does things so effortlessly, but I know that it's not effortless. In fact, there's maximum effort being put in. He just has a way of making it look effortless. And he's somebody that I think obviously opposing teams are going to have to deal with, because if you put too much, when they put too much emphasis on Davante Adams, which they will, that's going to open things up again for Jacoby Myers. So he's somebody that they have to pay attention to. I think before it's all said and done, both Michael Mayer and Brock Bowers are going to be players that opposing defenses, they can't just pay lip service to. They can't just say, yeah, we're going to defend them one-on-one and, you know, that's going to be that. They're going to have to eventually, as this season goes on, this is my prediction, I think both of those players are going to be, you know, quasi-focal points for this offense, especially with the offensive system that Luke Getsy is running, the reliance that I think these two quarterbacks, whoever ends up being the starter, are going to have on their tight ends. From what we saw, how the tight ends were being used during the open practice sessions, and it wasn't just safety valves. There were plays being drawn up specifically for the tight ends and getting them the ball in all sorts of different ways and lining them up at all various different vantage points. I think before long, teams are going to realize, oh, okay, Brock Bowers and Michael Mayer are a big part of this offense, and therefore we're going to have to respect them as a big part of that offense. And as a result of that, defensive structures are going to be geared toward dealing with them, not just paying lip service to them, but taking them seriously. So now, that was how many players? 1, 2, 3, 4. That's not even talking about the run game, which is going to be unto itself as well. That's a whole other issue that opposing defenses are going to have to contend with. So we named all of those players, and here's Trey Tucker, just kind of sitting there, just being able to maybe be that, if you're going to pay attention to everybody else, as you are going to have to, if the quarterbacks are being accurate with the ball, if the quarterbacks are being on time with the ball, and maximizing the weapons that we just named, that we just talked about, if that becomes the case, and they're operating at a pretty high function, and as a result, opposing defenses have to, on a play-by-play basis, make really difficult decisions on who to really pay attention to in terms of extra coverage on this offense, there's a whole bunch of guys that'll make you pay if you don't. And because of that, they're going to really – those are going to be players that they put a focal point on. I don't know that Trey Tucker is going to get that kind of I wouldn't use the word respect, but there's just only so many guys that you can really build your defensive structure around. There's a limit to how much you can pay attention to, you know, the amount of guys that I just mentioned. Something's going to fall through the cracks. And – I look at Trey Tucker as the guy that can exploit that more than anybody on this team, because I think he's got the speed to really take the top off of a defense. I think he's going to find himself in favorable matchups against cornerbacks that, from an athletic standpoint, he's going to be able to beat. We already saw last year that this was a player that was capable of getting open. I think he had 4 catches over 49 yards right in that area. He was the deep ball threat, so to speak, for the Raiders. They didn't do it a lot. But I think as the years go on, as this particular season goes on, they're going to tap into that more and more. And I think that if the offensive line is doing its job in terms of giving the quarterback some time, if the defenses play their role by paying a lot of attention to the players that we just mentioned, you're going to find situations where Trey Tucker is matched up in favorable matchups to go right down the field and make big plays. And then you throw in the fact that he's improved in terms of his overall understanding of the position. It's not going to just be a one-trick pony situation. You're going to be able to access a Trey Tucker in various different ways, whether it's that fly sweep, which now that he's got his legs back, I think that feature is going to be even more prominent and more impactful because he's going to have that fourth gear now to get to as he turns that corner and gets upfield, but also on screen passes. The explosiveness that I saw during OTAs and minicamp, that explosiveness, think of it like this. Catch, go on screen passes, right? That's what you do. You kind of set up, the ball comes to you, you got your blockers in front of you, you catch, you turn, you run. You know, you go try to find some daylight and go exploit it and go get as many yards as you possibly can. The explosiveness on those drills that I was just talking about, going from 0 to 100 in like the blink of an eye, that's the explosiveness that just was jumping off the field throughout this offseason with Trey Tucker. If that's the Trey Tucker that the Raiders are going to get for the balance of the season, that is an ultimate weapon. And for sure, he can be that X factor that every great offense needs. Now it's on Luke Getsy to figure out different ways, you know, to get him the ball and to access him. And it is kind of interesting because he is the third wide receiver, right? You got Davante Adams and Jacoby Myers. And I think for the most part, those players are going to stay on the field on a consistent basis. We all know that with Brock Bowers now on the scene, he and Michael Mayer are going to be on the field together quite often. The Chicago Bears, the offense that Luke Getsy was the coordinator of the last couple of years, they were top 10 in terms of 12 personnel. That's when you have two tight ends, one running back. The one is the running back. The two is the tight ends. One running back, two tight ends, two wide receivers. So somebody, a wide receiver, is coming off the field in that regard. And generally speaking, it's going to be a Trey Tucker. He's the third wide receiver. But does Trey Tucker force the Raiders' hand a little bit and say, whoa, 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 whoa. 12 personnel is great. You're going to run 12 personnel quite a bit. But I'm here to tell you that 11 personnel, which is one running back, one tight end, three wide receivers, can work at a high end too, because I'm going to hold up my end of the bargain and I'm going to be an asset to this offense. And I'm going to make you rethink how many times we got to go to 12 and how many times you stick to 11 personnel. So that's going to be interesting to watch. But I do think that between, as long as the Raiders offense is efficient, as long as they're getting first downs, as long as they're moving the chains, as long as they're piling up more snaps. That was a huge problem last year. When you're talking about a team that had trouble, I think it was 10 games out of 17 that they didn't surpass the 17-point mark. That's unacceptable. You got to get better than that. What was the main issue in that? Well, number one, they were not good on third downs. Neither quarterback, whether it was Aiden O'Connell here with the Raiders or Gardner Minshew with the Colts, were particularly good in that phase of the game. That's got to get better. The quarterback play needs to get better on third downs. And then certainly in the red zone is another area that they got to clean up. But that third down success rate, which was for the Raiders, it was like 25, 26, somewhere along that line. Contrast that to the top 11 teams in the NFL on third downs. Guess what? All of them went to the playoffs. So there's a direct correlation between good quarterback play on third downs, good team efficiency on third downs, and winning and going to the playoffs. So it's an area that the Raiders really have to improve on. And yeah, I mean, it's obvious why you want to keep the ball. You know, if you don't make the third down play, and let's say you don't get it on fourth down or it's too long, you're giving the other team the ball. That's giving them possession. Your drive just ended. Their new one is just beginning. And that was a huge problem for the Raiders because their lack of success on third down cut down how many snaps they had on any given Sunday. It was, I don't know if it was the lowest in the league, but I would imagine it was one of the worst in the league last year in terms of actual offensive snaps. I'd have to go double check that. But there were games where it was just downright bad. And because of that, they weren't able to get the ball to all, they weren't able to access whether it was Michael Mayer or Devontae Adams as much as he should have been or Jacoby Myers. It was very limited because they just didn't have the necessary plays of scrimmage to keep the ball rolling and to keep the ball moving. So their ability to be efficient and extend drives and pile up plays is only going to help them be able to spread the ball around and give everyone the necessary love that they deserve, but that the Raiders offense needs. They need all of these players to contribute. And there's just too many of them to let any of it go to waste. So being able to be better first and second down and certainly on third downs to keep drives going, to keep the play counts up, is gonna help everybody involved, and that includes the offense. And if that is the case, then naturally they're gonna score more points. And that's going to also help the defense, by the way. Your best defense is a defense that's fresh, is a defense that you're not continually asking to save the day or to go out there again. Another three and out, we're back on the field. Holy cow, we were just out there. Can I get a little chance to rest over here and to recharge the battery a little bit so I'm a better defensive player when I'm out there? You can't keep putting your defense in that kind of a position. Will that be the case early in the season? Maybe. It's going to take a little while, I think, for this offense to really hit its stride. That's okay. It's a long season. You don't expect it to be perfect right off the bat. And if there's a team as better positioned than the Raiders in the NFL to say, okay, we're gonna, it's gonna be okay. It might take the first four games of the season for this offense to really get its act together. With this defense, as good as it is, there probably isn't a better team in the league, or the Raiders are amongst the best teams in the league to be able to withstand that. Because I think this defense is going to be able to hold up its end of the bargain. You might have to win some ugly games early on with low scores. Obviously, the Raiders hope that that isn't the case. But if it has to be the case, then I think this defense is the type of defense that's going to be able to, we can help buy this offense a lot of time just by, being a stonewall defensively. So we'll see if that is the case, but I'd fully expect as the season goes on for this offense to get better. But it has to be a case where this offense is being efficient. I'm Vinny Bonsignore. This is JT the Brick Show. We're going to be coming back to talk to Callie Lawson Freeman. She's a great young writer with the Las Vegas Review Journal. She covers the Aces. The Aces are going through a little bit of a struggle as they try to three-peat in the WNBA. Should we be concerned? I'm not that concerned. Give us a call, 702-365-9200. We're going to talk to Callie all about it.
Four triple bingo. AC 4-3, 51-47. This is the way the Aces started the game. They scored the first 6 points, and then New York scored the next eight. And New York had control the rest of the half. Laney Hamilton now has it. Crossover dribble on Jackie. Jackie tries to pick the pocket. She's going to get her third foul.
Huh. The Las Vegas Aces. The 6-6, Bobby, Las Vegas Aces. Well, they are the two-time defending WNBA champion. I don't think anyone foresaw a 6-6 record, but why am I not freaking out, man? I am not freaking out whatsoever. I kind of expected that this was possible. Maybe not 6-6, but certainly when you're taking everybody's biggest punch, and that's what the Aces are dealing with as the two-time defending champions, it's tough. It's tough because they know that there's another whole other world out there. It's called the playoffs. And as long as they're ready for the playoffs, I think they'll be okay. But we're going to find out for sure whether or not I'm on the right path. And maybe Callie's going to poke some holes in my theory here We'll find out. But I do want to welcome in Callie Lawson Freeman, a great young journalist. I'm just going to say that. Just going to throw that out there for everyone to hear. She's covers the Aces and does a brilliant job doing so for the Las Vegas Review-Journal. She's my new teammate and new colleague, and I'm happy to say that. First of all, Callie, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
I was going to do this regardless. I was going to invite you on the show regardless, but it just feels even more pronounced because the Aces are kind of going through a little bit of a struggle right now. Now, correct me if I'm, or just tell me, Vinny, you're crazy, you're nuts, what are you even thinking? But I'm not freaking out. I'm not even the least bit worried over what's going on right now. Tell me I'm right, or hey, tell me I'm wrong, that there's no reason to be freaking out about where the Aces are 12 games into the season.
I think it can go both ways. I think Becky Hammond has said it best herself. The Aces are like a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde team this season. Like, there are times where you can watch them and think, yeah, this is definitely a team that can three-peat. And then there are other times when you watch them and you think, oh man, like this looks bad. So I think that ultimately what Becky has emphasized throughout this whole season is that she feels like it's a mindset thing. She said after the team's most recent loss that she really felt bad about just the vibe of the team from the first day of training camp, which I thought was fascinating. She just said that the team didn't have an edge. They're not hungry. So it's almost like, you know, you talk about a Super Bowl slump a lot in football, and it feels like that on a major scale with the Aces, and they're working with a lot of new personnel, which we could talk about more. Like, they just signed a player, waived somebody yesterday. So I think that, like, that's taking a lot of adjustment for them. And, like, this is a team with championship pedigree. Like, you want to believe that they can pull it together. And I think, I mean, that's what that locker room wants to believe. But you can tell they're also very frustrated. Asia Wilson was in tears after that loss to the Liberty on Saturday. So it could go either way. I don't think you're wrong. I mean, if you look at the betting odds, they're still the favorite to three-peat, which is crazy. You know, I mean, nobody's lost faith in them yet. So I don't think you're wrong to not lose faith in them either.
I always forget who the good one and the bad one is. Dr. Jekyll is the good one, right? Mr. Hyde was the bad, right? That was like...
Honestly, I think so. I think...
Yeah.
I think Dr. Jekyll... I mean, you would think that the doctor would be the good one.
Right, exactly. Even though he, you know, did some bad things and kind of took some crazy sort of whatever drugs and everything like that to become Mr. Hyde, and Mr. Hyde was just nuts. So let's start with the Mr. Hyde side of all of this, which would be, we're assuming, right? We're going to assume that Mr. Hyde is a bad side. All right, let's focus on the bad of the Aces right now, because like you said, there's a little two faces going on right here. Is it a talent issue, or would you say it's just kind of a malaise issue of the carryover effect from defending a championship, being a two-time defending champion, and kind of easing into the season, maybe?
I mean, with how competitive the WNBA is, I never want to say it's a talent issue ever, right? Like, to be in the WNBA, you have to be one of the 144 best players in the world. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, none of these players are scrubs. It doesn't matter who they have, you know? And so you keep on hearing Becky Hammond, Asia Wilson, even Kelsey Plum say, like, we have enough in our locker room to win. Like, I've heard them say that after a few losses now. But then when the front office goes and makes moves like they did yesterday, you know, waving Emma Cannon, who they barely played. You know, she got 1 minute in garbage time in that loss to Liberty. But they liked her a lot. Like, they spoke so positively about her. And then they go and sign a center and Jessica Carter. It's like you kind of... It's like, how do you align those messages? Like, do you feel like you have enough in your locker room, or do you not feel like you have enough talent? So, I mean, I don't think it's my place to say. I look at these players and I'm like, I know they're incredibly talented. I see them in practice. Like, I see how things could all work for the Aces, but clearly the front office feels like, you know, they need to make changes, and they've done that more this season than they did at all last season. Like, I mean, I remember just being at Media Day this year and their roster still wasn't finished. They had like three additional players. And that was not the case last season. You know, they had their final, I want to say 11. I think they rocked with 11 players just for salary cap reasons. But, like, that they rocked with that from media day till the end of the season. Even with Candace Parker out and Chelsea Gray getting injured, like, they didn't go out and add players. But this season, the Aces have just, it's been sign and wave. And I think that's making a big difference.
We're talking to Callie Lawson Freeman, a great young reporter with the Las Vegas Review-Journal. I'm just going to tout that and pat ourselves all on the back because we're all teammates over at the Review Journal. But honestly, she's really good at what she does. And you can follow her at Callie J. Law on Twitter. So it feels to me like part of the problem has been defense. And if I'm reading the scene correctly, it's also three-point defense, right? So defense, I think we all understand you were an athlete back in the day. Defense is, I mean, it's definitely communication, and it's definitely they're structured to it. But a lot of it is effort. Defenses want to. You got to want to go out there and defend for the entire game and the entire length of the floor, and certainly making your closeouts and doing what you got to do to make sure you got a hand in somebody's face when they're taking a three-point shot. So when we look at just that part of it, the three-point defense, and as spotty as it's been, what would you put that on? Is it the structure? Is it the scheme? Or do you feel like there's a little, not effort. I don't want to say that they're not trying out there, but it's, you know, it's that 1% and 1% and 1%. If you're just that much off in terms of the effort, you're going to get your head handed to you at this level of play. Could it be that?
Well, I love how nice you're trying to be about it. You're like, I'm not trying to say they're not trying.
Right.
Like, Becky Hammon has said multiple times that they're not trying.
Okay. Like, all right. Let's just throw it out there for crying out loud.
Yeah. She will go in post-game conferences and cuss and say all types of stuff. She'll say, you know, we think we're going to go out there and just win effing games. Like, we don't have – she always talks about the try-hard factor, which is what you're alluding to. Like, you have to be a try-hard. That's why she loves Kate Martin so much, the rookie from Iowa, because she comes – as soon as she gets entered into the game, she tries to make a defensive impact. And you can tell she's working her butt off on the court, you know, to make something shake on the defensive end. And that's not like a universal thing on the team right now. And again, that just goes back to what she said. Like, they're just not hungry this year, which is really interesting to me. I mean, that's something that, like, I hope to explore further, because you have someone like Asia Wilson, the leader of the team, who you can see she's so passionate. She's on a historic tear to start this season. Like, I could go down and rattle the stats. She has, like, all of these WNBA records of consecutive 20-point games and all this. But the whole team is not consistently matching that. So sometimes you see flashes of, like, really good defense, and you're just like, wow, like, they just need to maintain that. But then it's very streaky. And, like, I want to give part of that. You know, Chelsea Gray is, like, their leadership on the court, and she's not out there. I mean, it seems like she's nearing a return, but I think she would help, you know? Like, if you're, like you said, like, defense is a lot of communication. She would be the most vocal person on the court in situations like that, and she's on the sideline.
Yeah, I was going to bring up Chelsea Gray because obviously she's been out of the lineup, and I think the Aces have felt that that loss big time. When is she coming back?
Well, I like how every single question you ask me, I'm like, well, Becky Hammon said, but like, she did say
well, that's, post-game. Yeah.
Yeah, she said in the post-game news conference, when we see her, we will see her. She's been questionable for the last two games. Whenever you ask about Chelsea, she'll point to the PR person in the room and go, what is she listed as? And they'll go, she's listed as questionable. But what I'll say is that Chelsea has been engaging in, like, much more extensive warm-ups than I've seen her do throughout this season. You know, we're like 12 games now. The first, I would say, four games, she didn't really warm up at all. Like, she was out on the court, but she wasn't doing much. But I don't know, before this game to Liberty, she was, like, actually, like, you know, their player development coach was kind of body checking her, like, all, and she was doing, like, running a little bit, like, not hard, but
she's ramping it up. She's ramping it up.
Yeah. She's getting there. So I think that we're getting closer, but I mean, Becky did say that she wants to see her in at least 2 5-on-5 situations.
Mm-hmm.
So the Aces need to have a full practice for Chelsea to be able to do that. And, like, for example, today they were supposed to practice and they canceled practice.
Mm.
Because their schedule is just so packed. Like, they've had games every 2 days, and then they're traveling and things like that. So, I mean, we could be at the point where maybe Chelsea Gray plays tomorrow. You know what I'm saying? Like, we just don't know.
All right, so
on Wednesday, I think, of their next game.
You mentioned the move that the Aces made. It was a fairly minor move. Somebody at the back end of the bench getting released. They bring in a rookie center, as you mentioned. What can I read into that? Was that maybe just using that spot on your depth chart to maybe send a little bit of message? Like, we got our eyes. We're not, this, you know, don't think for a second that changes can't happen if this doesn't get better. And this is just a little bit of a reminder that that's always an option that the Aces can use?
That's a good question. I mean, I would hate to, like, assume, I guess, what went into that. What my guess is that they wanted to get Asia some help in the paint because she is obviously doing crazy things like blocking, rebounding, everything, like, for this team in the paint. But if you look at the other bigs on the team, Kia Stokes, Megan Gustafson, Kia is a big rebound for the team right now, so that's not to discount her at all, but she's not consistently contributing offensively. And then Megan Gustafson is just, like, the reserve center, and they're using Asia at, like, forward. So I think maybe they're hoping that Jessica Carter can come in because she's, you know, she has a lot of experience, like, making an impact in the SEC, which, you know, makes a difference. She's coming out of Mississippi State. And so I think that they're hoping that she can really bang with, like, the bigs and, like, make a difference. And so I don't know if that's a message. I don't, like, sense that that's how the team, like, the locker room
right.
operates. But, it's definitely, you definitely take something from that. Like, if you're making Gustafson, for example, you're like, well, dang, I was already, you know, the second or third center, depending on how you want to view Asia, and now I'm pushed back even more on the bench.
I'm going to harken back to my days covering the Dodgers, and there was a player I loved covering, and his name was Matt Kemp, and they got off to a slow start. It's probably like a month into the season, and his whole thing, every time we would go up there and talk to him, even after a loss, he'd, guys, take your hand off the panic button. Don't even just stop. Just take it off the panic button. It's April, you know, or it's May. Early in the season. So we are in still, it's 12 games for crying out loud. I'm not pushing the panic button. I don't think anyone on the Aces are pushing the panic button. But I got to ask you, Callie, is there a point where the panic button starts coming into play a little bit for you or for the Aces? And if so, at what point do you start to genuinely worry about the Aces?
Yeah, I mean, I keep on hearing the phrase with the Aces from, like, front office people and coaches. But, like, we just can't dig ourselves into a hole that we can't get out of.
Yes.
And then WNBA, that's a really, like, it's really interesting to try to determine where that point is. Because, like, I don't know, like I mentioned earlier, like, there are only 12 teams. So it's not, you know, not that it's easy to do anything in the WNBA, because, like I said, that makes it a lot more competitive.
Mm-hmm.
But you do have, a little bit more of a margin for error in terms of making playoffs. Because it's, there are only so many teams that can get eliminated with such a small field. So I think that kind of is a point of comfort for me. I don't know. Like, I think that's also kind of how the team views it. Like, you always hear them say, like, you know, it's going to be a lot different in October. It's a lot different in the postseason. Because I think they have a level of experience in the postseason. Like, all they have to do is just get to the playoffs, you know?
And right. then
they can probably, they have an edge there that other teams don't. And so they just got to make sure that they're not eliminated from the playoffs when it gets to that point. So I think, you know, the panic button is like, I don't think we're like even close to that yet.
Right.
But I do think that maybe like in 3 weeks or so, if we're still having conversations like this one, then we will be panicking a bit.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Last question for you, Callie. And we're talking to Callie Lawson Freeman, a great young writer for the Las Vegas Review, covering the Aces and doing a fantastic job in the process. I can't let you come on the show and talk about the WNBA without talking about the Caitlin Clark factor. And I'm kind of taken aback. I'm naive sometimes. Like, I'm thinking, all right, it's all going to be great. This is this great young player coming in the WNBA, and it's going to take it to another level. And there's going to be somebody coming up behind her that's going to take it to an even higher level. It's just the nature of this. But there's like all this craziness that's going on around Caitlin Clark. Part of it I can understand. Part of it I'm super disappointed about. Don't necessarily need to get into that aspect of it. But are you surprised with the tone that we're seeing? I'm not surprised by, you know, the WNBA kind of collectively checking her a little bit and seeing, you know, what she's made of, a little bit, you know, aggressive on the fouls, seeing, you know, is there some substance behind all of this? And I think she's handling it well. But I'm not quite sure everybody's handling it well. And are you surprised by sort of how this has all gone, the first part of her career?
Oh, my gosh. I feel like that's such a loaded question.
Yes.
On one hand, it is shocking and, like you said, disappointing.
Mm-hmm.
But then on the other hand, if you've kind of followed women's basketball, even just women's college basketball, for like even just the past 2 years, you would not, like, it's hard to be shocked. But then, like I said, it's like you still find a way just based on some of the conversations and the way that you're seeing these other athletes be talked about. Like, I mean, we just watched the Chicago Sky, the Indiana Fever play, so that pits Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark against one another, who are just super exciting rookies, both in their own right. Obviously, Caitlin Clark is the number one overall pick. She's the most popular player in, like, I mean, in the league right now, but probably just on a broader scale. Like, she's a huge phenomenon. I think Angel Reese is, like, being presented as a foil to her, and she's being made to be a villain for, like, these very negative reasons.
Right.
And it's so unfortunate, because I think there are so many of us, like me especially, I would just love to watch their game and, like, enjoy their game. But again, you know, Angel Reese committed to flagrant foul on Caitlin Clark in this last game, and that's, like, all people are going to talk about for the next 2 weeks. But that was, like, a really good game. And at the end of the day, the Fever got the win, you know? So I just, it's disappointing, because I think it takes away so much. Like, and you never want to say, like, let's not talk about anything but basketball, because that's not how the WNBA operates.
Right.
The WNBA is a very, like, you know, this is a league where there are so many intersections. There's a lot of black women. There are a lot of queer people that play in the WNBA. Like, there are so many different, like, realities of society, I guess, at play that already make people upset just in day-to-day life. So then it's like when you, you know, put those topics onto a basketball court and let people get passionate about those things. Like, I understand why things can get so kind of, like, crazy, but it would just be cool if maybe people toned it down a little bit, because you don't really see things get this out of control with, like, the NBA, for example, or even, like, men's college sports. Like, it's, yes, obviously, fans are insane in general, but you just, it doesn't always have to get, like, racial.
Right.
And I wish that we could have, I don't know, more normalcy at the end of the day.
I completely agree. And I put some of it on the fact that there's just way more eyeballs watching it. So everyone's hypersensitive to it all. And what I would say is just chill, everybody. This is a natural recourse in sports. You're going to have to come into the league and prove it, and you're probably going to take your lumps along the way. She's handling it well. I think everyone else is handling it well. It's the outside that that I don't agree with. All right, Callie, this is the first of many times you're going to be coming on the show. I'm just letting you know that, so be on alert when we reach out to you, because we want to have you back on the show to talk about the Aces. Thank you so much. And everyone else, go follow her at the Las Vegas Review-Journal. If you want Las Vegas Aces coverage, and why wouldn't you, that is the best source for it. Callie, thank you so much. Have a great day.
Thank you. You too.
That was Callie Lawson-Freeman doing a great job on the Aces. I'm not panicking. My words of wisdom to everybody else is just chill. Let it play out. Everything is not a political or crazy, hypersensitive thing. It's just sports. I'm Vinny Bonsignore, JT The Brick Show. I got it. I want to say thanks again to Vic Tafer from The Athletic for joining us, talking about the Raiders, his impressions of the Raiders. I feel like we're on the same page with the offense. It's going to get better. It was bound to be a little bit raggedy during OTAs and minicamp. They're putting in an entirely new offense and trying to decide on who their quarterback's going to be. Also, our thanks to Callie Lawson-Freeman coming on to talk about the Aces. Not time to push the panic button. Chelsea Gray is on her way back. It looks like sooner rather than later. I think she's going to make a huge difference. Talk about infusing some hunger back into the whole operation and some connectivity and some communication. I think Chelsea Gray is going to provide that and more. So no time to panic. Even though the Aces are 6-6, it's 6-6. It's all good. I want to say thanks to JT the Brick for letting me hang on his show and sit in his chair. Up next, of course, is Q Myers and Unnecessary Roughness from 2 to 5. I will be on the top of the hour. Thank you guys for listening. We'll talk to you down the road.
appreciate it. Thank you, guys.